Okay. My boys say we're going to start with a little story that's going to annoy you. But bear with me, please. I want to use it not as an end in itself, but as a means of getting to a certain perspective. So I warned you, it's an annoying story, bear with me. There was a Yid by the name of Rabbi Yehuda Davis. He was Rosh Yeshiva in Monticello in America. He was one of the first American produced gedolim. He was the senior member of a group of American boys who went to Europe at the time, which included Rabbi Avigdor Miller, Rabbi Nosson Wachtfeigel, and others. He was very much an inspiring influence in many of in the lives of some of these people who ended up becoming great luminaries in America. Before he became Rosh Yeshiva in Monticello, he was a very, very unique person. He had an interesting job for a person of his background. He was the principal of the secular studies department in a yeshiva in America. It sounds a little strange, because you would think that it's more appropriate for a person like that to be the Rosh Yeshiva, which he ultimately became elsewhere. But that was his job. Rabbi Avigdor Miller used to say the truth is that if you do want to have to be able to run a secular studies situation in the yeshiva successfully, the person running it has to be a very great person. It has to be greater than the Rosh Yeshiva. So, okay. Part of his job was authorizing or rejecting the textbooks that would be used. And he gave the board a very hard time because he basically rejected everything. Maybe math books were okay, but he had a problem with everything. Yeah, a very hard time. It was very difficult until finally a book was approved. But then, the straw that broke the camel's back was when he rejected a history book. Why? Because when it told the story of Hanukkah, it said there that the Hashmonaim, the Maccabees, were a mighty band of warriors. And he said, no good, next book. And that was already a little bit too, taking things a little bit too far. And like I said, this is an annoying story, but stick with me. And this already, you know, they yelled bloody murder and they said, come on, you're going to reject the book because of this. Oh, my, said they went to Baron Cutler. Baron Cutler did tell him, really? There might be something, you know, a little off. If there is, whatever it is, we'll see soon. But, okay. I really just bought that as a humorous start. But could there be something to that? Could it be that saying that the Maccabees were a mighty band of warriors is sacrilegious? I don't know if it's sacrilegious, but when we get a true perspective of what was going on, it may have completely defeated the purpose of Hanukkah. Let's explain. If you think about it a little bit, the truth is the whole story of Hanukkah, the celebration of Hanukkah, is strange. It has to be understood. I remember it just dawned on me a few years ago that I really don't understand the whole Indian of Hanukkah. What are we celebrating exactly? We get mixed messages. We're celebrating the miracle of the oil. We're celebrating the victories in the war. Sometimes one is stressed, sometimes the other is stressed. Not clear, right? Nala Nisim? Only the wars are stressed. And the Gemara, which presents the story of Hanukkah, Nesbach Hashemen is stressed. Neither really make much sense, superficially. Miracle of the oil. First of all, the whole miracle itself is puzzling. A mitzvah is something we're required to do. We can't do it, we're puzzled. A mitzvah that's not done by us is meaningless. It's not a mitzvah. Hashem make a nest, the Shabbos will be kept. Mitzvah is our job. You can, you can, you can't, you can't. You have to do the best you can, and that's that. There's mamish no purpose in making nisim for mitzvahs to happen by themselves. There's no purpose in a mitzvah that wasn't done by us. So it's puzzling. In fact, Reb Chaim Brisker questioned the whole validity of the mitzvah. He said, oil. The Hanukkah requires olive oil. Olive oil means oil that's produced from olives, not oil that's produced miraculously. Oil that was produced from nothing, yesh ma'ayin, is a very great miracle. It's inspiring, but it's not the mitzvah of the menorah. Remember, today we can use any form of oil, but in the menorah, only olive oil. But this wasn't olive oil. The first day was olive oil. After that, it was miracle oil. It wasn't produced from olives. Okay, it's a whole pilpul, and there are answers, but we'll leave that for now. But the question is clear. Maral asked this question. What for? What was the miracle needed for? What did the miracle achieve? What's the meaning of a mitzvah that we didn't do? So, that miracle is puzzling. The milchamas, the wars, is also puzzling. Not in and of itself, but the fact that there's a Yom Tov over it is puzzling. Why? Because the impression that we're celebrating a victory is simply wrong. Historically, factually, it's wrong. The victory was very short-lived. It was not the end of the war. After the Nes Pach HaShemen, after the Jews took Yerushalayim, we looked in the history books, studied it a little bit. After the Jews took Yerushalayim, they were there for a short time. The Greeks overran it again. It was after that the Shema reached its peak. The wars continued. The tides very, very much turned against the Chashmonaim. After a while, the Chashmonaim, the Greeks, took over all of Eretz Yisrael after the Nes Pach HaShem. It wasn't that there was an Nes Pach HaShem and they lived happily ever after. The Greeks took over all of Eretz Yisrael at one point. Yeah. The Chashmonaim were holed up at one point in Michmash. That was basically the only stronghold they had left in Eretz Yisrael. And then, again, the rebellion went back and forth a few times. Nes Pach HaShem was one point. They won a battle. Right? They won that battle. They took Yerushalayim. They lit the menorah. They had the Nes. And then they were chased from there again. What are we celebrating exactly? You want to celebrate the victories? That happened a significant amount of time later. After all but one of the Maccabim were killed in battle. You know, that was the continuation of the story. Hanukkah was mamish not a happily ever after story. After the Nes Pach HaShemen, what? What's that? I read it in a few places. Mainly Rabbi Avigdor Miller's Sefer. He gives the whole dateline. But it's looking... Any history book of those days, you mamish can see the dates very clear, the different stages. Yehuda was killed in battle after the Nes Pach HaShemen, and all the Chashmonaim were killed in battle, except for one brother who ultimately became king, ended up making a peace treaty with the Greeks. And that was basically what brought about the liberation of Eretz Yisrael, after many years of bloody battle and many casualties. So it was not really a happily ever after story. So, this casts a little bit of a haze on both elements of the celebration of Hanukkah. What's the meaning of the celebration of the Nes Pach HaShemen? What's the meaning of the Nes Pach HaShemen? And what exactly are we celebrating when we're celebrating the victory? We're celebrating a high point in the war. It wasn't the end of the war. So in order to really understand what the immensity of Hanukkah was, what the magnitude of Hanukkah was, we really have to step back a little bit and get some historic perspective on the period, trying to get into that period. Really try to get into that period. Klal Yisrael, in the time of Hanukkah, were at an all-time low. You have to realize that. The Jews, part and parcel of living Jewish is Nevuah. Judaism without Nevuah is a comatose Judaism. We grew up with it. We're used to it. For us, Nevuah sounds like some utopian state. But come from the perspective of Hasinai through the periods of the Nevi'im. Klal Yisrael was always in direct connection with the Dvar Hashem. The thought of a Klal Yisrael without Nevuah was unthinkable. But as things deteriorated over the years, Nevuah started waning until the unthinkable happened. Nevuah stopped. The lights turned off. Or, Another way you might put it is, the curtain closed. Maybe that's the end of... Again, if you're not imbued with the right hashkafas, maybe this is marking the beginning of the end of Judaism. They had their glorious period. They failed. The lights are turning off one by one. You have to try to work backwards a little and appreciate. Yeah.
This is several hundred years
after. Not several hundred, about 150 or 200 years later. Historically, close enough. I'm building it up. So that was a very, 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 a big trump. 150 years, it's a very short time to get used to the idea. If you think about it, 150 years ago is not such a long time ago in the perspective of history. It can relate to 150 years ago is the time of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, right? Chafetz Chaim was a young man, right? It's visible past. That was the period of Nevuah. And that stopped. The lights turned off. What is Judaism without Nevuah worth? Okay, certain residues still remain. As long as we had the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, they still had the last of the Nevi'im. Slowly the Nevi'im died out. The Anshei Knesset HaGdola died out. The residue of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola was Shimon HaTzadik. In Shimon HaTzadik's days, even though Nevuah was gone, there was still, you know, when the light turns off, but you still see the coils are still flickering. In the period of Shimon HaTzadik, they still had certain divine manifestations going on in the Beis HaMikdash. They still saw the connection with Hashem, even though it was basically switched off, but it was still there. And then that went dark. Finished. There is no more live connection with Hashem in the sense of from Hashem's direction. Finished. Beis HaMikdash was still up. All of the Nisim of the Beis HaMikdash that they had seen in the time of Shimon HaTzadik stopped. Forget about the Nisim from the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. That was a thing of the past. Very depressing, demoralizing time in Yiddishkeit. Now try picturing yourself in that period living as a Jew, the way you are now. Regular, ordinary Jew. This, let's realize, this was the all-time low in the period of in the history of Klal Yisrael. There never was a lower period. Don't ask me about times in the first place on Mikdash when there was Avodah Zarah and Gilei Arayis, etc. At the end of the day, the fact that then there was Nevuah and now there wasn't shows that then it was a greater period. That itself. Hashem is still in touch. Hashem is not in touch, Kiviyoch. Okay. Now, is that the end of the story? The curtains are drawn, the lights are off. And then what happens? Now there's a new culture on the scene, on the horizon. The Greeks are starting to spread their culture. The Greeks are starting to spread their culture and their influence. It's taking over the world. The Greeks are a great advance in the annals of mankind. And most of the world was embracing their culture. Most of the world was happy to go along with it. And finally the Greeks made their way to Eretz Yisrael also. Initially, not with a hostile attitude. And they introduced their culture there too. And their influence started pervading the Jewish land as well. And Jews started falling for it. Jews became Hellenizers. What does a Jew looking at this in the perspective of history see? Nevuah turned off. The Nisim in the Beis HaMikdash turned off. And now slowly whatever is left of Judaism, of this half-dead Judaism, is starting to die out too. I think they call it, terrible term, but that's how they call it in the hospitals. The systems are shutting down. That's how they say it when a person is starting to go. The systems are shutting down. That's what was going on there. Some more Jews are becoming Hellenizers. Some more Jews are becoming Hellenizers. And then there are the few that are still sticking to it. And then the next stage comes. Now the Greeks decided that they're going to force it. They're going to force their influence. All the rest of the world is embracing it. Only one small, stubborn pocket of people that are saying, Shkoyach, we have better things. No. That was a big slight to everything the Greeks stood for. All of mankind is meant to recognize the greatness of what they're spreading. And now they started forcing it, and now already, not only that, but the Hellenizers are turning against the loyal too. And now it reaches a point where the loyal can't even stay in their homes anymore. They have to go into hiding. Isn't it clear that it's just a matter of time before everything goes down? Before it's all finished? To the rational person, you hear today all the time, to the rational person, a person who wasn't being closed-minded, a person who was willing to face reality, saw that Judaism was a dying cause, it was a matter of time, there was no question that they had the different statisticians, is that how you say it? Statisticians. Whether it would be 50 years, 70 years, it's a matter of time. It's clear, it's obvious, there's no two ways about it. But yet there's this small handful of people who are doggedly sticking to it. Steadfast. Now we have to realize what they were going through. The torture, we've heard all the descriptions. And we're not going to analyze that right now. But realize, understand this. They were willing to be killed and tortured, etc., etc. For what? For something that any intelligent person should realize is dying out anyways. You're going to be tortured to death, and for what? For Judaism? In 15 years, there's nothing left anyways. That's what you are going into hiding for, torturing your family for, willing to let yourself be tortured to death for? A flickering flame that's clearly going to be gone soon? Can you imagine the psychological torture? What gave them the drive to fight? Now understand another thing also. Up till a certain point, they were satisfied to give their lives al Kiddush Hashem. Right? The revolt didn't start right away. And the truth is, logically, it shouldn't have. There really wasn't a chance. There was no point. But when things started becoming clear, that was apparently the turning point. What was it that changed the approach? If the approach is that we're willing to give our lives, why should it have changed? Why should they have made the switch and decide to fight instead? The higher the answer is this. Avigdor Miller implied this. I didn't hear this from him, but this is the way I understood what he said. That what changed was, as long as it's an issue of me personally giving my life, I'll give my life. When there's no point in fighting. If you can fight, punch the guy in the face and take his gun, why not? But when it's a hopeless cause, the person gives his life, al Kiddush Hashem. Jews have done that all throughout history. But when it reaches a situation where the whole survival of terror is being threatened, then our job is to defend it, as strongly as we possibly can, tenaciously. That was l'chayra, the switch. Whatever it is, that whole campaign itself, it's one thing to decide to take a fatalistic approach and say, if we're going to die, we're going to die. But in order to actually begin a revolt and maintain it, there has to be an awful lot of drive. Where did they get that drive from? In the face of a cause that is really lost to the natural, to the rational mind. So you have to realize that this was what they were feeling. It wasn't just the physical threat, it was the psychological torture. And the fact that all of the Hellenizers, the Jews who did see the light, the Jews who understood, Rabbeisai, it's a new world, let's move into the new period. Right? The rational Jews were all looking at them and telling them, what are you being meshuggah? Right? What are you doing this for? But yet they fought. Now we have to realize what they were going through. They're fighting. They're being tortured to death. And they're killing themselves. And they're giving it their all. Like beyond human capability in order to fight for it. Now part of what was so demoralizing about it all was, besides the psychological torture, etc., 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 In the not so long ago past, any such things were acknowledged by some sign from Hashem. Whenever a major event was going on, a Navi came with a sign from Hashem. Again, that was... What's that? Good. Good. You're two steps ahead of me. You're two steps ahead of me. They knew it better than we do, but experiencing it in that way is very different than knowing it on a philosophical level. We understand that it's hashkafa we grew up with, and also, we're at the end of history when we can look back in retrospect and see time and time again. For these people, it was simply, they were, never happened before, waning, right? And it was dropping. So, these people were desperate. They were desperate. Is Hashem with us here? Is Hashem acknowledging our efforts? Right? Again, such a period where such major events are going on. So much suffering, so much sacrifice, so much effort, but no response. The line is off. No response. And they have to keep fighting anyways. They were desperate. They were so desperate for some sign of divine recognition. Now, here I come back to the point that we started with. They started winning battles. Shocking. Again, we're talking about a tribe from deep in the Congo taking on the United States Army. Okay, maybe it wasn't quite the same proportions. At the end of the day, I would assume that the U.S. Army could whip the Greeks with all their elephants. But, in terms of perspective, right, we're talking about a small, inexperienced group of ragtag fighters, according to one medrash, taking on the world power. Come in and crush them. But, shocking, they had one victory, and then they had another victory, and then they had another victory, and here, they were starting to see, maybe this is our divine acknowledgement. Maybe this is where our efforts are being crowned with Hashem's recognition. And now I want to make the point that we started with. What if somebody would come to them and tell them, you have again, a non-Torah person who respects what they're doing. You know, he respects, he likes a good revolt, right? Every nation glorifies this sort of story. He comes and he tells them, Rabboisai, he's going to give them a pep talk, he's seen wars. Says, Rabboisai, it's your determination that's doing it. When people are determined, they get places. When people stick to it, they get places. What would their feeling have been? They were hoping. Their minds, they're wondering, are these victories a sign of Hashem's favor? What if they were to be told, you know why? It's because you're determined. We've seen it in the past. Determination gets people places. That would have been devastating for them. That would have defeated the purpose. That's a little bit of the depth behind the annoying point I started with. But whatever it is, this was what was going on. They were fighting these battles, they're having victories, and they're wondering, is it because we're leading good battles? Is it because we figured out good guerrilla techniques? Or are these, in which case, it's not worth it? What's the point? So they're winning good battles. Again, the Greek influence is taking over anyways. So it's really just an issue of delaying the inevitable a little bit further. They'll win the battles, it'll be another 20 years. Right? They'll prove the statistician's wrong. It's like saying black plugs blood five times fast. And they'll prove them wrong. They predicted 50 years, it'll be 80 years. That's what we're killing ourselves for. No, we're killing ourselves because maybe this is Hashem showing that He's there. Yes. It'll look like it's almost there, but when we give that little push, Hashem will do it for us. They were so desperate for some sign that yes, it is Hashem. They took Yerushalayim, they took the Beis HaMikdash, and it was a little bit of a letdown that they did not have enough oil to light the menorah for the full 8 days. And here is where this whole story reached its peak. When they lit those candles, and the candles were still burning the next day, they went drunk with joy. They went wild. This was the sign that they were waiting for. This was the sign they were waiting for. Here Hashem was showing, yes, it is me. It is me. I'm going to show you something completely supernatural. Maybe you weren't yet to the mitzvah of Menorah. Again, we leave that debate aside. They probably were. But that was what they went so crazy about. Well, that was what they went so wild about. Hashem was showing, yes, it is me. Now again, and this is the point that you made before. Again, it was nothing like the concepts of earlier times. Nobody got the Dvar Hashem telling them Chizkumim too. There was a tiny, little something reminiscent of the earlier days. The time of Shimon HaTzadik, this was standard fare. This happened every day with one of the neighbors. That wasn't coming back. The earlier times weren't coming back. And it was one of a number of nisim that used to happen every day in the Beis HaMikdash. That wasn't coming back. Hashem was showing that exactly what you said before. The lights are turning off and you're headed into a period of darkness. But, yes, it's dark and I'm there with you. That's what the menorah was showing. This is what gave them the koyach to continue the fight afterwards. This really was the story of Hanukkah. This is what gave the victories all their value. This is what gave them the koyach to continue afterwards. That's right. Afterwards, the darkness became even darker. But now they were already fortified. Now they already had the message they're able to take with them through all the rest of history. It's the message that we still carry until today. That's why, yeah, the miracle of Hanukkah was not just a miracle that happened then and we're commemorating it now. That miracle of Hanukkah was conveying to them the essence of what was giving them the tools to carry through the next 2,000 years of Golus. That's what the miracle of Hanukkah was. They got that sign, they understood it, they internalized it, and they said, thank you Hashem, now we have the message, now we can continue through the next 2,000 years. Yes, the wars can get worse.
So why do we talk about four commons war on the...
Oh, so 1 minute. So, now the wars can get worse. Now, we can continue to die. We can continue to be tortured. We don't know how it's going to play out, but we do know one thing. Yes, the light is still on. It's behind the curtain, but it's still on. Hashem is still there. And now, what is it that we celebrate? We're celebrating the fact that Hashem did miraculously assist them in fighting off the Greeks, in resisting and managing to maintain Yiddishkeit. But how did we know that that's what it was? The miracle of the Nes Pach HaShemen. It was the miracle of the Nes of the Pach HaShemen that gave the wars their value. That was what showed them that yes, what they were hoping was the understanding in these wars really was. After we had the Nes Pach HaShemen, they were able to celebrate all the victories. That's what the Maharal says. Alter from Kelm says that. But that's the relationship between the Nes Pach HaShemen and the victories. The victories, the whole value of the victories was that Hashem was showing, I will reward your efforts with my assistance. Just since at that time they weren't used to it like we were, they didn't realize they realized probably in Ashkafic level just like we do. But they had never experienced seeing it through natural means. Up till that point in history, it always came through miraculous means. Hashem gave that tiny little glimmer of an ace just to show them, Rabbi Yisrael, yes, this is the new Mahalach we're dealing with. This is the way it works now. But yes, it is me. Those shocking victories were really me. No, don't worry. It's not your skill. Don't worry. It's not your determination. Don't worry. It's not the fact that you managed to develop good guerrilla warfare. Don't worry. It's not that. It's me. That's the celebration. That's the celebration. That's why, really, Hanukkah is not, like we said, it's not commemorating what happened in the past. It's carrying that message until today. Because the truth is that since then, we had to remind ourselves of this time after time. This happened time after time, right? In the days of Reb Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. What was going on in Germany at the time? I'm not talking Holocaust here. I'm talking spiritual Holocaust. The physical Holocaust was just the natural outcome of the spiritual Holocaust. Where did the spiritual Holocaust start? Berlin. Rav Hirsch came to Frankfurt. At that time, Reform had basically conquered Germany. It was the same situation. It was a matter of time. It was a lost cause. Yeah. Rav Hirsch was Rav in I forgot what it was called, I'm sorry. A big Chasheva position before Frankfurt. Where did he come from? I forgot what it was called. Something Avia. A big community. It was a number of communities that were together under his leadership. He got an appeal from a 12-family Kehila in Frankfurt. That was what remained of loyal Judaism in Frankfurt. To come be their Rav. Help them fight. He came to fight a lost cause. Mamish, the same thing. Came to fight a lost cause. He took on his old chavrusa. Geiger was the father of the Reform. You know that Geiger was with Rav Hirsch in university. They went to the University of Bonn together. By the way, everybody knows that Rav Hirsch was in university. What people less know is that he wasn't even there for a full semester. He was out by January. But he was out after a couple of months. What's that? Why? I don't know. That's the story. That's what happened. In the University of Bonn, he was roommates with Geiger at that time. They learned Zvachim Bechavrusa. Is that ironic? But whatever it is, as they both matured and Geiger went his way and Rav Hirsch went his way, basically Rav Hirsch was taking on Geiger, the leader of the Reform, his old pal. When Rav Hirsch put out, I'm confusing my information, it was either Chorev or the 19 letters. Geiger read it, praised it lavishly, and said, but it's a shame that he's putting these efforts into something that's not going to make it. Where's Geiger today? Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch's 12 family Kehila that was dying, where it was going to die out in 10 years, is thriving today. Where's Geiger in history books? But again, there was also, anybody rational was able to see that it was a lost cause, it was a matter of time. And Byron Cutler came to America to try to vibe Torah. How do you say to start it in the first place? To vibe Torah. But, no, begin, initiate. What chance did he have? No chance. It was mamish against all odds. Anybody who reads a little bit about his struggles back in the early days, people were acknowledging reality. In America, it's just going to work differently. Forget about it. You're not going to have the standards of Europe. But the thing is that these people, Rav Hirsch, Rav Aaron Cutler, and plenty of other people throughout history, plenty of other situations throughout history, were fortified with the message of Hanukkah. They were fortified with the fact that, yes, the light can be flickering, it'll continue to flicker for another 1,000 years, and all those, that mighty fan that's blowing it out, will be in the junkyard, and it'll still be flickering. From here, we can move on to the next level of our discussion. And really bring home what we're doing. When we're lighting the menorah. When we walk through the streets and see the menorah, we should see what we're seeing. By the way, just said to see what we're seeing. You know, the halacha is that if for whatever reason you're not going to be lighting menorah on the first night of Hanukkah, you make a bracha on seeing the menorah. That's the halacha. Not so practical. Lamaisa doesn't really manifest. But that's the halacha. You make a bracha on seeing. Seeing the menorah is a very, very kosh of a way of celebrating Hanukkah. And I want to put that into perspective too, based on what we just discussed, because this really is the essence of what Hanukkah is all about. Hanukkah shares with Purim a very unique characteristic, the concept of Pirsumei Nisan. Hanukkah and Purim. It's ironic, strange. Pirsumei Nisan is given so much weight in Halacha, and what are the two Yamim Tovim that have it? The two Yamim Tovim that have no root in the Torah. Well, not no root, they have a root. But again, the two Yamim Tovim that are Derabbanan. And in certain ways, that immensity, the magnitude of Pirsumei Nisan, according to certain opinions and certain circumstances, can even outweigh Deraisis. Why exactly Hanukkah and Purim? What is it that gives it this element. Now again, Daraisis and Daraisis. But what is it that gives this inin of Pirsumei Nisa, the Derabbanon of the Chanukah Menorah, that weight, that in a way, okay, even outweighs the matzahs on Pesach, etc., etc. We don't see this inin of Pirsumei Nisa being stressed. There is an element of it there too, by the way. But we don't see it being stressed there. And the answer is basically based on what we're discussing. What is Pirsumei Nisa? Is Pirsumei Nisa publicizing something that happened in the past? Nope. That's not what Pirsumei Nisa is. Pirsumei Nisa is continuing the nes of Chanukah today. Showing the nes of Chanukah as it unfolds today. The nes of Chanukah was a process that would continue all the way through the 2,000 years of Golos. By lighting a Chanukah menorah, we are not commemorating anything. We are demonstrating that the Nes is still going on. Let me put that into a funny perspective. But this is really what's going on. Not such a funny perspective. The Chovetz Chaim Soloveitchik says that people sometimes feel like they want to experience an openness. I want to experience an open miracle. I'd be inspired, I'd really believe. Chovetz Chaim Soloveitchik says, you can see a miracle no less stupefying than the great miracles of the past, the splitting of the sea, the 10 plagues. But he says, you have to use the eyes of your seichel to see it. Meaning, sometimes miracles hit you in the face. Sometimes Hashem says, can you put in 45 seconds of thought in order to see this miracle? We're not accustomed to doing that. We like miracles to hit us in the face. The Chovetz Chaim Soloveitchik says, 45 seconds of thought, and you can see with your eyes a miracle of equal magnitude. What's that? The fact that there is still a surviving Jewish nation and culture today. Now, he said this close to 1,000 years ago. But if we think about it a little bit, it's hard to note this as an open miracle. Because why not? We're here. We've been here. I've been here for about 35 years. I'm used to the idea. I'm not shocked. I wake up in the morning, I look in the mirror, I don't believe it. It's hard to be shocked at things that you grew up with. And that's why I have to use Einei HaSeichel, like the Chovetz Chaim Soloveitchik calls it. But if you really think about history in the broad perspective, all the statisticians were right. This time I got it right? All the statisticians were right. Why'd they have to term it that way? They were all right. Judaism had no chance of surviving. There should not have been a Judaism here. Look at all the mighty nations that did their utmost to stamp it out, whether in the physical or in the spiritual sense. The fact that today there's Yiddishkeit going on is an open miracle of the magnitude of Kriyas Yamsuf. Just, you have to think about it for a minute in order to appreciate it. Hashem wants us to think a little bit. What's been going on? Think about the Neiris Chanukah. The Neiris Chanukah. For many hundreds of years, it was lit in Bavel until the rulers of Bavel came and snuffed it out. They stomped it out. That's it. Finished. No more Chanukah. But then all of a sudden it burst up somewhere else in the globe. In Africa. In France. In Spain. Okay. So, you know the game? There's a game that you play, you can play in these arcade rooms. Exactly. With the gophers that pop up. There's like 8 gophers. Whack-a-mole. Oh, moles, not gophers. Whack-a-mole. You know what I'm talking about? There's a big board with 8 holes, 6 or 8 holes, and these moles pop up. You have to stand with a hammer and knock them down as they pop up. Like you have to hit each one. You never know where the next one is going to pop up. You have to manage to whack it down within 3 seconds or something like that, or else you're out. And they pop up, you bang this one, it pops up from over there. This is what's been going on. The rulers of Babel managed. The Jews were a eyesore in their land for whatever amount of years it was. Finally they managed, boom! They managed to stomp it out. And all of a sudden, boom, it flared up over there. The mole popped up somewhere else. France, Spain, Africa, all right. The authorities there got to work. Took them 100 years, a couple of 100 years, but finally, boom, they stomped it out. popped up in Eastern Europe, Poland, other areas. Oh no, the Europeans got to work, and they did a good job. They did a good job. And finally, Hitler came along, and he completely managed to snuff it out. Gave it a couple of good, real hard stomps. Boom, it's all out. Boom, flared up. United States, Eretz Yisrael, other areas of Europe. This is what's been going on. Bang it out here, it flares up over there. The Neir is Chanukah. Each year there should not be that light of Chanukah in the streets again. Every year, Kislev, the streets light up. Lit up in Babel. Then, year came along, it was dark in Babel, but it was suddenly light over there. Dark over there, light over there. Each year, when the streets light up again, it's a new Nes. It's mamish, a new Nes Chanukah. That's the chashivas of any of Pursum and Nes. You have to appreciate what you're doing when you're lighting the Neir's Chanukah. You aren't commemorating something. The truth is that really, your presence is bringing out the Neir's Chanukah. But we do it. The mamish illustrate, we highlight it on Chanukah by lighting that candle. We are creating the Nes Chanukah of Tavshin Ayin Gimel. We don't know exactly what's been going on. The truth is, all this stomping out that we've seen over the years, there's so much more that should have happened. Ein Bal Nes Makir Benisoy. The Chazal elaborate in different midrashim on how, for all the tzaras we've suffered, that's a small fraction of everything that the Goyim had set up. From one year to the next, there should not be another Chanukah. One year to the next, the Goyim should be able to be reassured, this year the streets will not be alight. This year, it will be dark. And then, Kislev comes around, and you walk through the streets, and they're alight again. So when you walk through the streets, and you see the lights and the candles, realize what you're looking at. Look at it, Be'in Tzichlecha. Look, it's a Nes that's happening now. It's a new Nes. The Nes of Chanukah is unfolding all the time. And when you're lighting the candles, realize what you're doing. You are mamish representing Hashem. Kivi yochel. Hashem says, I'm behind the curtains now. You show the Nes for me. I did the spectacles at Kriyas Yam Suf, at the Ten Makis. Now you do it. You show the world. Help light up the street. So it's living the Nes. It's not commemorating the Nes. The truth is, this mamish is the essence of Chanukah in its way, Purim in its way. Purim is mamish, the same story. Mamish, the same story with a little bit of a difference. And I want to end with this. This is just a very fundamental understanding in general of the whole system of the Yomim Tovim. Rav Hirsch puts it down this way. Chanukah is celebrating on the spiritual level what Purim is celebrating on the physical level. The same exact thing. Chanukah is celebrating that there should not have been Yiddishkeit anymore. That happened at that time, and it continues to unfold throughout history. Purim is exactly the same thing with its Pirsum Nisan. There should not have been Jewish bodies anymore. That Nes was brought out at the time of the Megillah, and it continues to unfold anew every year. So I just want to finish by putting the perspective on the Mayadim in general. The way Rav Hirsch puts it is like this. There are two tracks of Mayadim. There is Pesach, Sukkot, Purim, and there is Shavuos, Shemini Atzeres, Chanukah. Now, don't try to memorize it yet. When we give the insight behind it, it'll be crystal clear. There are stages in the Jewish history. There was the birth of the Jewish people. That was at Pesach. Then the Jewish people were created as a physical nation. Corresponding to that, they were created in the spiritual sense on Shavuos. Pesach and Shavuos celebrate the creation of the Jewish people. Pesach in the physical sense, Shavuos in the spiritual sense. On Sukkot, what are we celebrating? Ki b'sukkos yishavti es b'nei Yisrael. Hashem didn't just create the Jewish people, He saw to it that they will continue. He maintains the Jewish people. He kept them going. In a supernatural way. That happened all throughout the years when we had that open relationship with Hashem. And that's being celebrated on Sukkot. Shemini Atzeres, is to Sukkot, what Shavuos is to Pesach. That's, I'm not going to spend time now establishing that. That's a famous concept. Shmini Atzeres is to Sukkot, what Shavuos is to Pesach. Meaning, Sukkot celebrates the continued maintaining of the Jewish people. In the physical sense, Hashem kept them alive, He fed them and sheltered them in the Midbar. Shmini Atzeres celebrates the continuation of Torah in Klal Yisrael. That's why, did you ever wonder? We celebrate with the Torah twice. We celebrate with the Torah on Shavuos, then we celebrate by learning. We celebrate with the Torah on Simchas Torah as well, Shmini Atzeres. What are the two celebrations? In Shavuos, we're celebrating that we got the Torah. In Shmini Atzeres, we're celebrating that Hashem is continuing to give us Torah in our time. Each generation is a new chosen people. Chanukah and Purim is the next stage of this. Chanukah and Purim, and here is exactly the way you put it before. Chanukah and Purim is the continuation of this mahalach after the lights are off. Hashem kiviyochol stepped behind the scene. We don't see Hashem anymore. Yet, the miracle of Shavuos, which continued with Shmini Atzeres, is continuing in the darkness too. The Torah, our connection to the Torah, our Ruchnius will continue to survive. Even in the darkness, Hashem is still there, rewarding our efforts to keep it going. And Purim is exactly the same thing on the physical level. Pesach, we were created. Sukkot, we celebrate Hashem's open maintaining of the Jewish people. And on Purim, we're celebrating the fact that Hashem is continuing to do so through the darkness, even though we don't see it. We know that He's right there behind the curtain, running it all and pulling the strings. This is the way to approach Chanukah Be'ezus Hashem. These are the feelings we should be feeling on Chanukah. We should focus on experiencing it. We should be looking with the Einei Asecha, like the Chovetz Chavos says, to strengthen our conviction, to thank Hashem in a personal way. Again, we're not thanking Hashem for what He did for our ancestors. We're thanking Hashem for the fact that He deems us worthy of that same miracle. The fact that Hashem considers our Ruchni is important enough to keep it alive in our year, in our generation too. Tavshin Ayin Gimel. A Klal Yisrael that's without Rav Eliyashiv. A Klal Yisrael that's without all the great people who died in the last year. Did we now drop underneath Hashem's required level? Apparently not. Because we have Chanukah this year again. Hashem is still, against all odds, whether we're aware of it or not, keeping the Torah alive in us. This is what we're trying to appreciate on Chanukah. This is what we're experiencing on Chanukah. And this is the cause for celebration. Again, I'm reminding...